And welcome back once again. It is Parish of the Patriots. Glad you found us this week, whether you're a turned member of the congregation or it's your first time stepping through the doors. Glad you're here. If you are new around here, we do have a Christian-specific segment. It's roughly around the halfway point of the show, so you probably want to stick around for that. I would recommend it. This is the 171st installment of this show. Time flies when you're having fun. We always get the support thing right out of the way. There is no paywall. You know, there is no annoying things like paywalls. I whenever I click on like articles, sometimes somebody will link an article and it's like, you know, you try to read the rest of the article and it'll be somewhere like the New York Times, you know, and you click on it and it's like paywall, you know, it's like to continue to read this 6 million word gibberish of nothing. Give us some money, you know, subscribe today. No, thank you. Even if they were saying something meaningful, I'm not subscribing. We don't do that. We don't have anything behind a paywall. What you see is what you get. And on the flip side of that, we do ask. I do ask that you put a little something in the plate. Just imagine you're in person and the offering plates being passed around. Drop a little something in. It is very much appreciated. We got snail mail. It doesn't get any easier than snail mail. You ain't got no excuse. You know, way back in the day, people, when all there was Bitcoin, people were like, I just can't figure out Bitcoin. Bitcoin's easy now. I mean, like I said, I've been seeing these Bitcoin ATMs in the convenience stores. Have you seen those? Bitcoin ATMs. If you brush past it, if you look at them, because I stopped and looked at one day and just kind of glanced over it. I don't need one, but they look pretty simple. It's one of those, you know, you scan the QR thing with your phone and it makes like basically an account. And you can do everything right there. You can cash your Bitcoin out right there at the ATM. You know, you can buy Bitcoin right there at the ATM. And you can send Bitcoin with your phone deal that the ATM thing will help you set up. It's pretty simple stuff. Not a bad idea, I don't think. Not a bad idea at all. But, you know, back in the day, that's all you had, Bitcoin. And people be like, I just can't learn that Bitcoin. Fair enough. But you can learn to put something in an envelope. Pay your bill. Pay your Parish of the Patriots bill. Oh, it is very much appreciated. Go on, listener, supporter mailbag. Just got one this week. Mr. T, GPD, every show providing humor wisdom. Please don't ever stop. I've included a donation to help you buy a few gallons of gas. Like I say, that's from Mr. T. Diesel fuel is $5 a gallon. Not in California. Here in Texas, $5 a gallon for diesel fuel. Regular gas is in the fours. It's in the fours somewhere. It's crazy. Crazy, this inflation. You know, they're just killing us with it. And they don't care. It's like it's intentional. I read somewhere years ago, and it was worded something. I'm just trying to remember it. It was worded like with nations, you know. Like when everything goes south, nations are basically, their economies are already pre-collapsed. They were already collapsed before it happened. They're actually going to fare better than ones that go into a global collapse from a higher place, you know, from a comparatively better economic position. I remember that and I apply it to my own life. See, I figure as the economy collapses here in the U.S., see, my personal economy has been collapsed for years now. I mean, my personal economy has been in the gutter for years now. I'm like sub-Sahara Africa over here with my economy. My economy has been collapsed basically for years now. So I'm going to be in a better position than people that are used to having money. You know, when the whole big everything flushes down the toilet, I don't have that far to go. Those people got to go a long way down. I mean, it's going to be a lot tougher. You might call that coping. I call that finding a silver lining, maybe. Yeah. Always keeping it real. We won't be discussing the Uvalde, Texas school shooting. If you want my hot takes on that, I did a solo Daily Nationalist this past Friday. Be sure and check that out. That was the whole topic of the show. So, you might want to check that out if you want to hear, if you want to hear my hot takes on that happening. It's amazing how they just keep shifting from one thing to another, to another, to another. You know, this will be old news in a week and we'll be moved on to something else. It's like we just keep getting faster and faster to the next crisis, the next thing that is in that horrible 24-hour news cycle. You know, maybe we'll go back to COVID. Maybe it's going to be monkeypox, but we know it's going to be something, don't we? We have confidence that we're getting something. Might go to Ukraine. I don't know. World War III. You know, I always remind everybody, I record the show. You know, the show airs on Tuesday. I record the show over the weekend. So if World War III goes officially hot by Tuesday, don't sit around and think I'm a moron because I'm not mentioning on the shows because it happened after I recorded. After I recorded the show, World War III went technically hot. It's getting pretty hot. Escalating. Yeah. You're going to get the second front with China? I don't know. At some point, you have to think that this thing's going to get hot. And Memorial Day. Memorial Day would be, well, the show airs on Tuesday, so Memorial Day would be yesterday. Be Monday. Here in the U.S., we honor our heroes, our fallen soldiers and heroes. And I was thinking about that, you know, because they make a big deal about Memorial Day. And don't get me wrong, really. And I mean this in all seriousness. This is like one of those, you know, disclaimers, you know. Not intention to put down, you know, people who have died in the military. It's not my intention at all. But I was thinking about this because you get all these Memorial Day things they put up, like, you know, this field full of flags, and they put up these little pictures and plaques of all these different soldiers and sailors and whatnot, members of the U.S. military that have died for our freedom. One of the things I hate about Memorial Day is this is where they really reinforce that, you know, boomer. I'll be opening myself up for more boomer hate mail. With this meme. You know, this nonsense of if you love your freedom, you thank a vet, buddy. I saw somebody with one of those cringe stickers the other day, you know, with the American flag. If this flag offends you, I'll help you pack. Okay. That means a lot. But it reinforces this notion that Americans have. This notion that Americans have that, you know, if you love your freedom, think of that. You know, this veteran hero worship thing. Now, you might sit there and say, well, it doesn't really hurt anything, doesn't it? But it does. Because as I say, we're barreling towards hot World War III. World War III, the hot version, not the proxy version. We're doing the proxy version right now. But we're barreling down towards hot version of that. And when they have people conditioned with this hero worship military thing, it makes it easier. It's like it preps people to go along with the next thing. If you're busy worshiping the military, the U.S. military's heroes, and you're not allowed to question anything, it's not a far stretch to turn that into you're not allowed to question this policy. And that's the problem. And it's intentional, by the way. How dare you question our heroes? If you say the policy was stupid, then you're saying the heroes are stupid and going and dying for your freedom. Thanks to our heroes, we're not speaking Vietnamese today. Thank goodness. I'm not speaking Farsi because of our heroes. It sounds ridiculous when you say it, but see, that's what they tell us. When they say, oh, well, they're fighting for, our heroes have died for our freedom, so, you know. They're basically saying if the U.S. military wouldn't have been in Vietnam, you'd be speaking Vietnamese. You would be, I don't know, in New Ho Chi Minh City right here. They'd rename Dallas as New Ho Chi Minh or something. Of course, it's stupid because it's all based on a lie. Now, as I said, it's never my intention to put down, you know, I do. I got a problem with, you know, just putting down, you know, speaking ill of the dead, as they say. But if you look at things truthfully, I was thinking about that. When you look at these things and they put up, you know, and they put up these pictures and they talk about all these flags and they talk about, you know, our heroes that died, blah, blah, blah. But if you have the realistic view, of, okay, in this conflict, in that conflict, in this war, in that war, was the U.S. really threatened? I mean, what part of the tranquil life of the United States citizen would have been threatened had the U.S. not entered into that conflict? And if you're truthful about that and you wind up coming to the conclusion that, well, nothing would have, There would have been nothing threatened, but in the for the citizens of the United States, if they just stayed out of this war, that war, this conflict, or this military action, or whatever the hell, this police action, all these different names they come up for this stuff. If the answer is it wouldn't have affected the lives of the American people at all, then how do you not, how do you come away not being critical of the policy? In other words, those people died. They make it as though you're disrespecting those people who died by saying they died for nothing. But such is not the case. Most of the, historically speaking, most of the conflict, it's like they run around and say, you know, Russia, they're using conscripted soldiers. That's the history of the U.S. This volunteer military thing is a, you know, this is a recent, relatively recent invention in the U.S. Most of the U.S. is war, World War II, Korea. Those were all fought with conscripts. Vietnam, guys were drafted. They didn't volunteer. I guess some did, but they didn't volunteer. They got drafted. They got forced to go. Now they, oh, Russia's using drafted conscripted troops. Yeah, because the U.S. has never done that. You know, these guys didn't have a choice. And I was just thinking that, okay, if these people died, if these people that were in the military then, they died in these, because say a guy died in Vietnam, which, I mean, pretty much universally everybody admits was useless. There was no point in doing that. There was no point in being there. But if they died for no reason, then is not their blood on the heads of the leaders that sent them? It's like the leaders of the government that sent them to die in a conflict that had nothing to do with us, that was no way, shape, or form threatening the well-being of the United States citizen, then is it not as though they killed those guys? They are the ones responsible for their death. Oh, I mean that. If the politicians in the U.S. who sent guys to Vietnam, I'll just use that to keep things simple, to look at one conflict. You look at Vietnam. Like I say, universally everybody admits that there was really, at the end of the day, no point to it. If for all of the guys that died in Vietnam, are not the politicians who sent them, who knew that, they knew that at the end of the day, it really didn't have anything, that there was no way Vietnam was going to threaten the well-being of the citizens in the United States. Are they not? They took them and forced them. They drafted it. They told them, you got to go. They sent them over there. And they get killed. I would propose that those politicians are as guilty for that person's death as the enemy soldier that fired the bullet, because they wouldn't have been there to be shot at had they not been sent over there by these very same politicians. And it's important. It's important because the U.S. is never running out, doesn't seem to ever run out of new conflicts it's dying to get involved in. And like I say, we're barreling towards open hot war on two fronts to boot. World War III with Russia and China. That's where we're headed right now. The political leadership is even more incompetent than they've ever been in the history of the country. And this is where we're headed. I think it's important. It's important to question these things because this is where they're heading. And they use these brainwashing techniques. Don't question it. If you're questioning it, you're disrespecting the heroes. If you question, I remember after 9/11, if you question, why are we invading Iraq when they didn't have anything to do with 9/11? Well, you're disrespecting the heroes. It's like you're spitting on Vietnam veterans. You're just no different than those hippies spitting on veterans coming back. I asked a guy about that one time. I asked a guy that went to Vietnam, and not as a cook either. He was actually a combat troop. It wasn't one of those. You'll notice, and I was told this, by the way. This isn't just me. You don't know, Dan. Yeah, I was told this by a guy who went to Vietnam. The more of that, you know, regalia they wear, like guys that actually went and were like in the jungle and getting shot at and shooting back and involved in the whole nastiness, they're the least likely to have. So if you see a guy that has just like, you know, I don't know, one little pin on Memorial Day that says they were in Vietnam, he was probably a combat troop. When you see the guy that has the cap, a jacket with his whole, you know, all over his car, he's got stickers about Vietnam veteran, and I went to Vietnam, and I got like regalia all over him about Vietnam. He was probably a cook. No, seriously. I mean, this is, like I say, this isn't just me, because you'd be like, you're just saying that, shut up. The actual guys that were in Nam come back, and they will tell you this. They will. They'll tell you. Anyway, get back to the story. I asked a guy one time. He was a combat vet from Nam, and I asked him about that. Is that whole thing true? I said, y'all come flying back in, then you step off the plane, and some hippies, flower children hippies, were out there, you know, hawking loogies at you, spitting all over you. And the reaction was basically just a laugh. It was like, dude, well, I spent a year eating rats and snakes in the jungle because the guys back in the safe zone were selling all of our rations on the black market so they could buy drugs and whores. I spent a year in the jungle eating rats and snakes, getting shot at, shooting other people. He said, do you think I would step off an airplane and some faggot hippie is going to spit a loogie on me? What do you think is going to happen? Seriously, I just came back from this. You know, I'm still in killer mode. And you think I'm going to walk off a plane, some hippie going to spit a loogie? He's like, file that under shit that never happened. But yet they made that, you know, I don't know. If you question, why are we attacking Iraq when nobody really thinks they had anything to do with 9/11. You're no different than one of these hippies spitting a loogie on our returning Vietnam vets. And they hushed everybody, for the most part, into silence. Look, where they use these emotional triggers, you know, because you see that they present this narrative. You've got a guy who was drafted, sent over to Vietnam, and he finally makes it. He's one of the lucky ones. He makes it back alive. Steps off the airplane, and some guy that didn't even go is insulting him and spitting at him. It's an emotional narrative. They're trying to manipulate you. If you question our policy, you're no different than those guys spitting. Even if that happened, it's two different things. It's not the same thing. It's not remotely the same thing. But it is. It's an emotional, manipulative, emotional argument. And they do this all of the time. It is manipulation. And people fall for it. That's one of the things, though, that when you see all of this hero worship, this hero, you know, the military is a hero. These heroes, you can't question. It always translates into you can't question policy. You got plenty of people right now, Normicon type people, whoever. Maybe people that view themselves as old style liberals, who right now will say, well, wait a minute. Why are we antagonizing Russia and China right now? Why are we got this antagonistic? Why questioning this policy? You know, why do we got people, you know, like that, like the line some politicians have thrown out there, you know, we're sending all this money to Ukraine. We're doing all of this antagonistic thing with Russia and China when we're out of baby formula. Why are we doing this? But if they get off into a war, those people will shut up and get right in line. And same way with regular people you interact with in your life. Right now, people will say, yeah, I don't understand why we're being so hostile with Russia and China. They keep saying this is a big deal, but I don't understand how it affects my life any. And people are saying that now. But these morons go ahead and get us off into a hot World War III officially with Russia and China. Everybody shut up, fall in line, and say, we got to support the troops. We got to support the troops. Why? Why? Well, we got to support the troops because they're going over there and fighting for our freedom. They'll fall right into that line. Emotional manipulation, brainwashing. I don't care. You can have the most staunch Trump-supporting, self-proclaimed conservative you want to, who talks about he doesn't believe the media and the fake news. Trust me, they do. They do. They don't believe it when the media is telling them something that they don't necessarily want to believe. But at the end of the day, if the media says it, they're going to believe it. They're going to agree with it, and they're going to go along with it. And if it falls into the line of the narrative, their preconceptions of I've got to support my military heroes, they'll fall right in line and say, well, this is a time of war. We have to support the president no matter what, no matter who he is. We have to support our government no matter what. Boy, that's a handy thing for the government, no matter what. Imagine being handed that blank check, no matter what. They always act like, funny thing here in America, they always act like, you know, it's different in a state of war. You know, they'll point to like World War II and say, yes, people had to make sacrifices. It was a time of war. But it's temporary. Everything goes back to normal later. But for the past, say, 20 years, we've been in a permanent, quote unquote, state of war. And they keep basically saying, hey, it's different. We're in a state of war. You can't question these things. We're at war here. You know, it's how they name everything a war. We've had a war on drugs almost my entire life. We got a war on terror. We got a war on drugs, war on poverty. And the track record on these wars isn't so great. But you see, they love to name everything war because it insinuates that this is a special time of crisis. You see, it's a war. You have to give up your freedoms. You have to be willing to sacrifice because we're at war. Everybody's got to sacrifice. They don't have to sacrifice. They never have to sacrifice. they sit there and they're going to eat all the good meals. It doesn't matter what fuel costs. It doesn't matter what gas costs. It doesn't matter if when they get on their jet airplane and fly over here to eat a steak at this one steakhouse they like to go to and it costs $50,000 in jet fuel to do that. It doesn't matter to them. Meanwhile, you over here trying to skimp, you'd be putting $60 and you got like 14 gallons in your tank. And you're like, I can't buy food. Hey, don't question it. It's a time of war. You've got to sacrifice. Then, of course, the insinuation is at some point it'll return to normal. But it's obvious here in the U.S. it's never going to return to normal. They just invent a new war, which means you never get your freedoms back. And you're never going to get your freedoms back because people will not ever question it. Because that would be dishonoring the troops, the heroes. I can virtually guarantee after this show, some Spurg is going to come along and say, you're just insulting people who went and died for their country. You're a piece of shit. I guarantee you, there'll be somebody that is going to react like that. Never getting the point or refusing to get the point or whatever. That the ones that are truly shitting all over these people are these politicians, are these supposed government officials, these government officials who sit there and in such a, what do I want to say, such a disingenuous manner, use these people, use the memory of these people for their own gains. They don't care. When you see some politician go and lay a wreath or a flag, you know, like, oh, look, they have the TV cameras out there and this politician with their somber face walks up and hands the folded flag to some dead soldier's family. Do you think that politician really cares? They may have the fake tears coming down. If they really cared, they wouldn't have had to have the TV cameras there now, would they? When you see Joe Biden or whoever the president is, whoever, Obama, Bush, doesn't matter. When you see them walk up there with their black clothes on and lay the wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, do you think they're sitting there going, man, this is horrible. These poor guys, they went through so much. And they don't care. They don't care. They're thinking about what they had for supper last night. They're thinking about how, you know, their next political move, how they can gain a little more money, and a little more power. That's how it is. Let's be real here. That's how these people are. They really are. They crap all over these people. And then if you criticize their policies, you're just disrespecting those who went and died for their country. They didn't die for their country. That's the truth. If you look at the conflict and you cannot come away and say, well, the life of the U.S. citizen would have been adversely affected had this conflict not been fought. If you can't do that, then they died for nothing. There should be some holding to account. to these government people, these politicians, these so-called leaders who send people to die for essentially no reason except for their own power and their own greed. They don't ever seem to get any criticism, though, do they? And like I say, this is important kind of to reel things back in. Me and my tangents. It's important because as we barrel towards a hot conflict, they will use the same mind manipulation. And I'm going to tell you, just be prepared for it. People are going to fall right in line. You know, people you've talked to right now, they're like, yeah, I don't know why we're sending all these lawyers, guns, and money to the Ukraine. The conflict goes hot. If and when the conflict goes hot, those same people will be like, well, time for questioning. That's over, buddy. It's time to get in line. We're at war. We got to back up. We got to back the red, white, and blue. We got to get behind America here. It's different. We're at war now. We're always at war. We're never not at war. My entire life, basically, the U.S. has been at war in some form, way, shape, form, or another. You ever notice that which you're not supposed to criticize? You know, it always turns into you can't criticize them. You can't criticize the policy. Don't question our troops. You know, don't disrespect our troops. How am I disrespecting the troops? I'm saying you're a moron for coming up with these stupid war policies. You're just disrespecting our troops. You know, I don't want to live in a police state. How dare you disrespect our police and first responders? What? They translate it. If you criticize them, then you're criticizing the heroes. You're criticizing the police, the first responders, our military heroes. You see, they use them like a human shield. Our politicians are like the Azov guys, and they use they use these quote unquote heroes in the military and our first responders and all the rest of it. They use them as human shields. If you criticize them and say, well, this war is stupid. Why do we need to be World War III with Russia and China? This is dumb. You're disrespecting. Let me put my human shields out here. You're disrespecting our troops. We're at war, don't you know? It's so cringe. And what's funny is the guys that get through it, the combat troops that get through it and make it back will be the first ones to tell you it's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. They're not there fighting for your freedom. They're fighting to stay alive and to keep the guys that are around them alive. That's all they're doing. I told a Vietnam vet one time. I looked at him. I kid you not. Yes. And you're sitting there going, you didn't really say that, but I did. I said it. I looked at a combat Vietnam vet one time and I was looking at something that was made in Vietnam. And I looked at this person and I said, I just want to thank you for your service. And I held it up. And I said, you know, because of your service, I'm not speaking Vietnamese today. And you might think they were fed, but they just laugh. The point here being is the guys that actually go through the crap will be the first ones to tell you it's all bullshit. You know, go ask somebody that went and fought in Afghanistan. What was that about? And they'll tell you it's bullshit. It's just bullshit. We're just trying to get out alive. Some of us did and some of us didn't. We're trying to get out in one piece. Some of us did, some of us didn't. The people that spout this grandiose nonsense about, oh, we were fighting for freedom in the American way, are people that don't have to go do it. Now, they may be in the military. If you're back here in the U.S., you know, and you're nowhere near the action, then, yeah, you might talk about, yeah, I was a veteran during the Afghanistan war or conflict. Where were you? Stateside. You know, but I was in Germany. But the guys that are actually in the combat, they'll tell you. They'll be the first ones to tell you. The ones that speak all this grandiose nonsense are the ones that weren't actually there. When you talk to grunts, guys that are on the ground, they fought in this. They'll be the first ones to tell you it's bullshit, man. It is total BS. We don't even know what we got off. They threw us in there. We were ill prepared. We had crap equipment. You know, everything was geared for like two wars ago. None of it was geared up towards what we were trying to do. It's BS. They'll tell you that. I'll tell you that. And it's still still these politicians, when you criticize the government policy, why, if you ask why did we do that? Because if you ask why did we do that, it's relevant to ask why are we doing it again? What does it matter? Why are you bringing up something like Vietnam? Why are you bringing up these other wars? Why does it matter? Well, it matters because if we didn't have any business fighting in that war, why then do we think we have business in the war they're ginning up right now? You know, if we didn't have any business fighting any of these other wars, if it wouldn't have affected the lives of the U.S. citizens had we just stayed out of it, then how come maybe it's a good idea to question the next conflict that they seem to be ginning up for us? And I love how these politicians will always use these weird, vague terms, too, you know, to justify this military stuff. I remember when John McCain was alive, thank goodness we're past that. But I remember when John McCain was sadly still alive, and he was really good. He really loved to use these terms. There was never a war. If he would have had his way, he would have had us in a war with Russia like 20 years ago. And people like that will always talk in like these vague, grandiose terms, you know? America's standing on the world stage is affected. But you got to understand, buddy, you're stupid. You don't understand these things like we understand them. Okay, explain that to me. Well, see, what you don't understand is it does affect American citizens. Oh, okay, good. Tell me. Because if I understand how it affects the lives of the average American citizen, then maybe I can get behind your latest war effort. Well, you see, this has to deal. It's complicated. Oh, it's complicated. This is when you know they're fixing to bullshit you. Oh, it's complicated. You see, this has to do with America's prestige and standing on the world stage. What the hell does that even mean? Don't ask me to explain it. If you're too stupid to understand it, you wouldn't understand the explanation. Translation, I can't explain it because it doesn't mean anything. You know, it's not as if they can sit there and tell you, you don't understand. The more of these weapons that get used, the more have to be bought. And then the defense industry makes billions of dollars. And then I will, when I retire or whatever, I get on the board of the defense industry, or I get that phone call that says it's time to sell your stock. You know, all of these things, you know, where it goes around in a circle, they can't tell you that. So they're going to tell you these vague terms, America's prestige and standing and leadership value on the world stage. Okay. It's all about greed. It's all about an endless thirst for more and more power for themselves. And they don't care who dies. If you question it, they'll just use these people as human shields. They'll dig up the corpses of dead soldiers, metaphorically speaking, obviously. They will dig up the corpses of dead soldiers and parade them in front of them and say, you're not allowed to criticize me. You're not allowed to question the fact that I'm getting rich. That I'm profiting from death and destruction. You're not allowed to question that. We dig up these corpses and use them as shields. And yet when you question it, it is you. It is us that get accused of dishonoring our heroes, dishonoring the truth. He's just dishonoring our heroes. At the end of the day, we know who's doing it. We know who the real ones are. That are dishonoring the memory of those who died in America's countless wars. We know who it is that's using people, both past and present, as shields to shield themselves from criticism for stupid and foolhardy policies. Anyway, we need to get into the Christian specific segment for this week. Hopefully it'll be good. You didn't get anything out of this first part. Maybe the second half will get better. Maybe it'll get better in the second. You had us in the first half, but it got good in the second half. Or maybe not. I don't know. But either way, you know what to do. Get in there. Fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. So, of course, being the Christian-specific segment, we focus. This is our part of the show where we focus on things from a specifically Christian perspective. It's not really, doesn't really deviate that much from the rest of the show, honestly, because our faith always is centered around truth. But this is where we really focus on trying to grow as believers and trying to gain more and more understanding. We, as Christian believers, we understand our role in this world is to spiritually grow. I mean, eventually everybody dies. The whole point of this life is to mature as much as we can spiritually so that we're the most prepared to enter into the eternal realm. If a baby goes to 9 months, the full term, and is born, it's going to have a lot easier time than one that's prematurely born at, you know, 6 months or so. Well, how early it can make it. The point is we're trying to mature. The more mature we are spiritually, the easier time we're going to have when we enter the internal realm. But again, all of these things aren't just reflected, in the things to come. These things are reflected in the world around us. We gain understanding of the world around us and God's creation and God's design as we grow as Christian believers. I thought this week we'd focus and talk about self-confidence. Do you have self-confidence? Should you have self-confidence? What brought it to mind, I think we don't understand terms. We don't understand the concepts presented to us in the Bible. We are supposed to be humble. We are not supposed to be prideful. You know? So is humility meaning a lack of self-confidence? You know, I think it's easy to get caught in this trap to where if you have self-confidence, you think, oh, well, that'd be a failure, though, because I'm not being humble. How can I be humble and yet have self-confidence? And I thought that basically was what we would kind of tackle and look at this week and discuss this week. You know, the difference between humility and pride, the difference between self-confidence and pride. Self-confidence does not equal pride. It's too wholly different things. We'll go ahead. Let's go ahead and do a little bit of Bible reading because I thought would maybe kind of give us some backdrop. I don't know, somewhere to jump off from for this discussion. We'll start with Romans chapter 8. We're just going to do verses 30 through 31. Moreover, whom he did predestinate, them he also called, and whom he called, them he also justified, and whom he justified, them he also glorified. What shall we then say to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? Now, you see, this really reflects self-confidence, doesn't it? But it doesn't fall into the category. It doesn't fall to the temptation of pride. Why? Because we understand that it comes from God. We have this confidence because we believe God is with us. Well, if the Lord is with us, who can be against us? You see, it's easy to sit and say something like, you've probably found yourself saying something along the lines of, oh God, I have no confidence in myself, but I have confidence in you. You know, I have no confidence in myself, I have confidence in God. And while that may be true to a certain level, if you think back, Jesus would say, you know, the Father's within me, I'm within the Father. Now, as this relates to us, what? He sends the Holy Spirit. And what does that mean? He is within us and we have that relationship. He is within us and part of us is within him. We have fellowship with him in the Holy Spirit. Now, again, if the Lord is with us, who can be against us? If God is with us, in other words, if you say, I have no self-confidence, if you reject self-confidence, then in a sense, you're rejecting the notion that the Lord is with you in his Holy Spirit. Because if the Holy Spirit is within yourself, then of course you have to have some sort of self-confidence if you truly believe that he is with you. If you don't believe he's not really going to be with you and everything's going to go south no matter what, and you're not going to come to understand anything, and everything's bad and awful, then you don't truly believe he is with you. This should not be mistaken for humility. It's a whole different thing. I want to go ahead and get into our other Bible verse I had wrote down. I thought that might be relevant. I don't know. We'll look at Proverbs. We're going to do chapter 4, verses 11 through 19. I have taught thee in the way of wisdom. I've led thee in right paths. When thou goest, thy steps shall not be straitened, and when thou runnest, thou shalt not stumble. Take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her, for she is thy life. Enter not into the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it, pass not by it, turn from it, and pass away. For they sleep not except they have done mischief, and their sleep is taken away unless they cause some to fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the just is as the shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is as darkness. They know not at what they stumble. Now, what are these verses, both what we read from Romans and Proverbs, what do they have in common? I would say the common theme is there's a theme of confidence. If you adapt it, to yourself, it's self-confidence. It's self-confidence. We have to understand, at least have an idea of what these terms are meant in the biblical sense. Maybe a better way, maybe an easier way to understand is to look at it on a grander scale. And, you know, if you look at, say, vast cities that man has created these vast cities, but he hasn't. Man hasn't created anything. Well, you say, well, yes, he has. Look at these. Man has created these vast cities. Look at my car. I don't even understand how it works, you might say. And yet I get in it and it starts and it goes. Man has created these things, but he hasn't. Man has built these things. Understand how only God truly creates anything. Every molecule in this world, in this universe that we understand, is time. Every molecule in this temporal realm was created by God. Every atom. And the atoms come together. You get your molecules, and then you go keep going bigger. When these things are put together in a certain thing, you have a piece of wood. You have a tree. You know, you have a piece of iron. You have a piece of copper. You have tin. But all of these things, down to the molecular level, were created by God. Man cannot create anything. Man just takes the parts and assembles them. You were turned loose in a warehouse full of all these random parts and said, create to your heart's content. You might learn to build all sorts of things. You might build your own car. You might build a bicycle. You might build all of these different things. But you didn't create anything. The parts were left there for you. You were just turned loose in there and say, see what you can build with it. Let's see what you can do. What can you figure out? What can you learn? But you didn't actually create anything. You didn't put the parts in the warehouse. Now, again, if you look at a vast city, those are things that man has built. But there was no new creation. He just took the different elements and the different things and assembled them in a different manner and made something that looks different than something else. But the true creation was done by God. Now, we can apply this to our own lives, our own view by understanding this. If God is with us, if the Holy Spirit is with us, then of course we have self-confidence because it is within our, he is within ourself. So of course we have self-confidence. But we don't fall into the trap of saying, because I'm so smart, I accomplish all these things because I did it myself, because I'm so capable. We understand as Christian, in other words, we understand as Christian believers that our confidence comes from his presence within us. Now, if you look at the humanist view, which is very common today, which is the view that man is the pinnacle of creation, man is the top of all that is. Man himself is basically, if man is at the top of everything that exists, then man is a god. It elevates man to a state of being a god. That's pride. Okay, that is sinful pride. You see, that view is one of pride. Whereas Christian believers, we believe, well, man is at the top of the hierarchy in this physical realm, but man was created from dust. Man was created by God, basically out of dirt. And we go back to being dirt, where the humanist view is that man is the pinnacle of all existence. See, there's the difference between humility and pride. Pride says, well, man is essentially elevated as a god, where humility says, well, we may be at the top of this silly temporal realm, but we're basically created by from dirt, and we all know we're going to go back to dirt. You dig up an old enough grave, you're just going to find what amounts to dirt there. That's the difference between humility and pride. Let's keep trying to bear down on this, because I do think it's really important, and I really do think we fall into a trap, and my apologies if I'm not really hashing this out and making it in a way to where it really hits home. I'm trying here, folks. I believe we really conflate these terms. You start self-loathing. You start putting yourself down isn't humility. Okay? But if you think you're being humble by putting yourself down, you're wrong. You're incorrect. If you think lacking any kind of self-confidence means you're actually a good Christian person and you're being humble before God, you're wrong. And I think really to get it right, we have to really come to understand what these terms mean, what these concepts mean from a spiritual point of view. Now, if you think about Jesus was talking to his disciples, and he says, and I don't have it in front of me, so you're getting the off the top of my head version. I'm sorry. And he said, if you get invited to a prestigious banquet, take the lowest seat for yourself. Take the lowest seat for yourself, because he who's holding the banquet might show up and say, hey, whoa, why are you sitting down there at the least honorable seat? Come up here. Sit up here at this more honorable, this higher rank, this higher position, this higher seat. Jesus also admonished, he said, likewise, when you go to a banquet, don't go up there and say, well, I'll take the right-hand seat. I'll take the highest seat of honor here next to the guy who's holding the banquet himself. Because he said you're liable to embarrass yourself, because when the host of the banquet shows up, he's liable to say, oh, you need to give that seat up. That's so-and-so's seat. That ain't your seat. And you'll be humiliated. Because you got to get up now and everybody's looking at you. You trounced in there like you somebody. You pranced up. You marched up in there like you somebody and said, I'll be taking this seat because you know it's me. And then the host of the banquet shows up and says, no, actually, that's this guy's. You need to move down here to this other seat. I don't even know why you're doing that. Why are you sitting there? Now, the humble... The attitude of humility is when you came to the banquet, you took, you didn't elevate yourself. You left it to the host of the banquet to say where you're supposed to be. You took the lowest seat. But here's the thing. You still come to the banquet. Okay. You didn't go, because if you took this to the extreme of self-loathing and lacking self-confidence, when you got the invitation to this prestigious banquet of why would they want me there? I'll just throw this. It's probably a trick. The host of the banquet doesn't want me. I'm nobody. I'm just a nobody. And you wouldn't even, you refuse to show up even to the banquet. You see, you have to have the self-confidence to walk into this prestigious banquet room where all these honorable people are walking around. You have to have the self-confidence to walk in there like, but yeah, I belong here. I belong here. What do you mean you belong here? I've got an invitation. I have self-confidence. I'm walking through the door. Not in the attitude of arrogance or pride, but because of self-confidence. Of course you're confident. You got an invitation. If you didn't belong there, you wouldn't have got an invitation. So you're strutting through the door like, yeah. Somebody going to be checking at the door and be like, okay, let's see, invitation. Oh, yeah, you got an invitation. Yeah, you're right. You belong here. Get on in. If you try to go trouncing in there with no invitation, they're going to be like, who are you? They're going to call security, drag you outside, tell you don't come back. But of course, you come in with confidence. You got an invitation. But the point is, when you're there, you don't get prideful and be like, yeah, not only am I here, I'll be taking the seat of honor tonight. It's right up here on the right hand of the host of the banquet. And the host shows up and embarrasses you, humiliates you, because it's like, no, that's not your seat. That belongs to somebody else. All right, you're not where you're supposed to be. You see, pride. Understand the difference between pride and self-confidence. From being humble to being self-loathing. There's a wide difference there. And I think it's really a trap we can fall into to where we conflate these things. You're sitting around and you're just putting yourself down all the time, putting yourself down. You think you're being humble. But you're not. You're basically saying you don't think God is with you. If the Holy Spirit is within you, then you have to have some kind of self-confidence in yourself because he is with you. Jesus said, the Father is within him, he is within the Father. What if he would have turned around and told his disciples, well, I can't do anything, I can't do anything. They'd have been like, well, nobody's with you. Would he be, you just told us this big line about the Father being with you, and you're like, yeah, well, I can't do nothing. You know, we'll just sit around and wait for the Father to show up. Maybe he'll do something. I don't know. I'm empty. I'm empty. What can I say? See, self-confidence. If the Lord is with you, you got self-confidence. You showed up to the banquet. You got the invitation. You lack self-confidence. You're just sitting around doing self-loathing. You're going to tear up the invitation and not go because you're just an awful person. It was probably a mistake. And who would want to invite you anyway? See, that's not humility. That's foolishness. That's self-hatred. It's like the whole thing, people, you have these like catchphrase verses from the Bible, and people regurgitate them. A lot of the time, people don't even understand them, the least, non-believers, and they like throw these verses in your face, you know. But it's like people never think, like you have these verses that you've heard like millions of times in your life, whether they're from believers or non-believers, and they're simple verses, and yet nobody even seems to take the time to really think about what it means. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. And everybody's like, yeah, love your neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself. But what if you don't love yourself? You have this simple verse. It gets regurgitated. And how often has anyone ever asked that question? Everybody spits it out. Love your neighbor as yourself. Yeah, that's pretty clear cut. Okay, well, how are you going to love your neighbor if you hate yourself? If you love your neighbor as yourself and you are one of these people that is confused humility with self-loathing. If you sit around and just constantly down on yourself and put yourself down, well, if you're going to love your neighbor the same way you love yourself, which I love being action, by the way, not an emotion. If you're going to love your neighbor as yourself, then when you see your neighbor, you're going to be like, oh, wow, your yard looks like crap today. You know, I mean, you're going to be putting your neighbor down. If you're loving the neighbor, if you're taking the action to the neighbor, to your neighbor, as you are to yourself, and you're constantly just putting yourself down, you're self-loathing, hating yourself, then that's the way you're going to act towards your neighbor. You're going to constantly sit there and put your neighbor down. You're going to sit there and put your neighbor down and not have anything good to say. You know? If you don't ever have anything good to say to yourself, you're not going to ever have anything good to say to your neighbor because it applies. It starts with yourself. You're going to be able to love your neighbor if you don't love yourself. The starting point is yourself. And yet people read that and be like, well, you're supposed to put yourself down and elevate your neighbor. It's not what it says. It says, love your neighbor as yourself. So that will be reflected. If you spend all of your time putting yourself down, if you never have anything good to say to yourself about yourself, then that's the way you're going to be to your neighbor. It's connected. It's love your neighbor as yourself. Let's rephrase it just a little bit. I think God will be okay with it. You will love your neighbor as yourself. You will treat your neighbor as you treat yourself. It will be reflected. If you are just constantly negative to yourself, that's how you're going to be to other people. You can't love anybody else if you hate yourself. It starts with you. This is a truth that has been proclaimed. And like I said, it's so funny because this verse has been spit out so many times that any non-believer can sit there and regurgitate that verse to you. And yet people look at it and don't get any understanding. They won't really grasp the depth of this little simple phrase. If you hate yourself, if you're down on yourself, if you have no self-confidence, if you don't have anything good to say, how are you going to do anything for your neighbor? It's as yourself. It's telling you, this verse tells you that it is connected. How you view other people is connected to how you view yourself. If you view nothing good about yourself and you hate everything about yourself, you're not going to run around and find anything good in other people. Or you might find things that you're jealous about. My neighbor's got a prettier wife. My neighbor has more money. He's got a nicer house, a nicer car, a nicer whatever his life has made. But that's just covetousness. That's just covetousness. If you don't love yourself, if you don't have anything good to say about yourself, if you don't have any good view about yourself, you are not going to reflect that to other people. And again, the simple verse illustrates that. And how many people stop to really think about what that means? God is telling us that the two are connected. Starts with yourself. That's your starting point. If you can't help yourself, if you don't have anything good to view about yourself, you're not going to be able to view anything good about someone else. And again, don't confuse covetousness with a good view. When you covet, when you look at your neighbor and say, well, he's got more money, he's got a better wife, he's got, you know, a prettier wife, he's got a better house, he's got a nicer car. Yeah. You know, what is the underlying bitterness in that? He doesn't deserve that. That's covetousness. He doesn't deserve that. How come he's got that and I don't have that? They may or may not deserve that, but we'll leave that discussion for some other time. The point here is that that's not loving your neighbor, you know, not being nice to your neighbor. That's just jealousy. You can't love your neighbor as yourself if you're always putting yourself down. Don't sit there in your prayers and constantly put yourself down. God doesn't want to hear it. No, really, he doesn't want to hear it. Yeah, it's, yes, we can't quote unquote put ourselves in God's shoes, but just try to kind of reflect for a minute. What would it be like? You know, look at yourself and look at your average prayer. Look back, because we tend to like fall in these ruts and we have these patterns and we kind of tend to pray the same way. What's the attitude of your prayer? If you were God, not to say, you know, you could understand as God, but just for the sake of understanding, if you were God, would you want to listen to you? I'll say that again. If you were God, would you want to listen to that? If all you ever have to say, if you think you're doing some kind of great prayer because you're down and you're groveling, you're facing the dirt and you're like, Lord, I'm so awful. I'm terrible. I hate myself, God. You somehow are with me, but I'm just garbage. I mean, if you're God, would you want to listen to that? If you're a parent and this was your kid and this was all your kid ever talked about, you'd be like, where did this emo kid come from? I think my kid may be starting to cut themselves because they're emo. All they talk about is how much they hate themselves. You'd be like worried for your kid, you know, if you were a parent. If you were God, would you want to listen to yourself? Putting yourself down and acting like this is you doing some great thing, you know. It's funny because when you get caught up in that, like putting yourself down, it's like you have this arrogant attitude in the background of it. It's a contradiction because it's just a, I don't know, a confusion in your mind, you know. I'm doing the right thing because I'm really putting myself down today. God's going to be happy about that. See, that's we can wrap it up. And understand, again, to one of those lines Jesus spoke that most everybody knows, the truth will set you free. The truth will set you free. You see, humility is having a truthful understanding of, you know, yourself, your own failings, your own shortcomings. But you still have self-confidence because the Holy Spirit is within you. But humility is really understanding your own shortcomings, the truth. In other words, it's acknowledging the truth. If you elevate yourself above your position, then you're denying the truth of where you actually are. You know, of your standing, as it were. Going back to the illustration Jesus used of being invited to a banquet. You know, the person that elevates themselves, they're denying the truth. They say they deny the truth and say, well, I deserve the best seat in the house. The truth will set you free. The humble mindset is understanding the truth. You know, not trying to glorify yourself above your standing. But understand, like, if the Lord thought enough of you that he sent Christ to die so that, you know, you could have life, then you're worth something. You know, don't be sitting around and be like, I have no worth. I'm saying, well, then God wasted his time on you, didn't he? If you've been trapped in this attitude of self-loathing, thinking that that's what God wants you to do, you ain't get free from that. You ain't get free from that. And again, it's an easy thing to fall into. It's an easy trap to fall into. But you need to get free from that. You can't love your neighbors yourself if you ain't got no love for yourself. How you view yourself will be reflected on how you view other people and ultimately how you treat other people, how you talk to other people, how you interact with other people. It will be reflected. The two are connected. God said so. The two are connected. So if you're caught in a trap of self-loathing and you're caught in that trap because you mistakenly have believed that this is what humility, this is what God meant by being humble. This is what God meant by having a humble spirit, sitting around putting yourself down and basically self-hatred. Free yourself from that. Have self-confidence. The Holy Spirit is with you. The Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit is within you via the Holy Spirit. He is within you. Of course, you should have some confidence. After all, if God is with us, who can stand against us? We'll wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of it. This is why I love the feedback from the listeners, you know, because I go through these sometimes and at the end I'm like, I don't think anybody's going to get that. I don't think I got that right. I don't think I got it. And then I'll hear from somebody say, man, you really nailed that, you know. And sometimes likewise, I hear back from people. It's like, could you go back and talk about that again? Because I really didn't get it. It's all good stuff. But anyway, hopefully you got something out of it. That's what makes it all worth it. We're going to get on out of here. And again, thank you for joining us this week. And hopefully you'll be back with us next week right here for the Parish of the Patriots.